Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show today dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. Today's show, I thought, would be interesting to do on a subject which I have kind of gone around the corners with and maybe touched on here and there. I think we may go more than one show, actually. I think this could be like Volume 1, and next week might be Volume 2. But we'll see. And today's show, I would like to address the comparison of metaphysics and physics as it applies to our entire universe. Now, it's important to understand when I say our entire universe, that is more than what most people think of as the universe. Most people think that our universe is like so many billion light years, you know, in diameter, like 13.7 is a number that's being kicked around these days. And it has a certain kind of oval shape to it and everything else. But all of that is part, actually the smallest part, of the universe I'm talking about. I'm referring to, instead, a universe with a total of 7 major dimensions of time and space, of which the universe that I've just described to you is only a fraction. And interestingly, maybe even fascinatingly, this universe I'm referring to is much, much more complex and has a greater meaning to it overall. Another thing that is interesting, when traditional physicists usually discuss our universe, is they talk about anything that is not immediately, we'll say, understood or sensed within our universe as being some other kind of universe, like a multiverse or something of that nature. We'll get into that, but I thought it would be interesting to start off the show with that. Now, if you would like to call in to either say something or ask a question or whatever, just saying hello, you can do so by calling 877-876-5227 in the U.S., and if you are in Canada, it's 888-815-9756. Okay, so let's begin, I guess, sort of, at kind of a beginning point. And that's not necessarily the beginning point of how the universe started, although I will get to that eventually. But the beginning point I want to start off with right now is when physics as it is today kind of made a breakthrough, kind of discovered enough things about the universe as to make it into something much larger and seemingly more explicable, seemingly, at least when these theories first were brought into, we'll say, the consciousness of the physics community. And that the two things that did this were the following: Einsteinian physics, which includes two major theories. One of them is called special relativity. What makes it so special? I guess I'm not sure. You know, that's a good question. But special because it was the first and more limited understanding of his viewpoints and thoughts. And then general relativity, which deals with a kind of offshoot, but a much larger concept about what relativity is. Now, what is this Einsteinian stuff that is relativity? Well, we could probably talk for a year and not completely understand it, but in a nutshell, it's something like this, that to begin with, the speed of light is an absolute in terms of how fast somebody can move. And time is related to it in that as one moves at a faster rate of speed, getting closer to the speed of light, the more time slows down for those who are in the traveling mode, eventually reaching no time at all to move anywhere because time stops at the speed of light. This is something Einstein kind of came up with in doing thought experiments. I love thought experiments. I think that that is the greatest thing anybody can be doing, is thought experiments. I hope you'll do some. Now, in addition to this, and this is about he probably started working on this in 1901 or two, but he was waiting to get his PhD, you see. Well, you got to get one of those, otherwise nobody's going to listen to you. And in 1905, he had it nailed down, so to speak. Now, he was using some of the other works of other people to also help him to understand his own thoughts about it. So it wasn't that he was just sitting idly by for a few years. But it is important to realize that it didn't just happen in a day. This was something that he thought about, and he brought it to fruition through these thought experiments. It took another about a dozen years or so before he completed his general theory of relativity. And that is kind of even more interesting in some ways, because that kind of thought eventually led him to understand that space is curved by energy, and that gravity, the things that we call gravity, are actually caused by space being curved around large amounts of matter and or energy. And eventually, he came to the conclusion that energy and matter are convertible one into the other. It takes an enormous amount of energy to make a very small amount of matter, and a very small amount of matter to make a huge amount of energy. And he found out that this had a relationship to his original special relativity theory about light. Now, you may have heard about this. If you have, it may make more sense in this very quick explanation I'm giving. All of this actually changed physics, because before these theories, before it was determined that time was relative to the way and speed someone was moving, and that space was also relative, in a sense, to how much energy was present and how it behaved, many people thought these were not relativistic issues at all, and they thought that the universe was extremely fixed or extremely the same and not relative to anything. So time was the same no matter where you were, no matter what was happening, time would be the same, that there was no absolute speed of things, which is a kind of interesting idea, and that gravity was something like a force, but it had nothing to do with space, it had to do with objects only. Very interesting. That was the prior way of understanding it, and actually it's pretty much the foundation of a thing called Newtonian physics. Now that's very interesting because it's like a sudden change, we'll call it, a paradigm shift, some people may refer to it that way, in the thinking of people. When things start becoming more relative, the good part about that is that you've got to be a little more open-minded in being able to construe a universe, and you've got to have a kind of a little bit more metaphysical viewpoint on things. Because the stuff that Einsteinian physics produces has some unusual outcomes under certain circumstances. And this whole batch of theories was a big deal. And it affected the way the huge size of our universe was looked at. However, not too long after Einstein came up with these ideas, people were starting to meddle into the minute, the very, very small parts of our universe. And they discovered, particularly a guy named Heisenberg, was working with some math by a guy named Max Planck. And he was actually a contemporary of Einstein. He was actually developing his theories around 1900, 1901, that kind of thing. But it wasn't until the mid-1920s that people were starting, including Heisenberg, to actually experiment with very, 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 very small, tiny things like photons and then subatomic particles And what they discovered is that these particles started to represent a new kind of physics. It was called quantum physics, based upon the way a small particle changes its state and actually where it is located in time and space. Very interesting things from the standpoint that it brought a new wrinkle, another sudden change into physics. The change was so kind of uncomfortable because it suggested that there was an uncertainty as to where something actually is and when it is. That really threw everything upside down. And in Einsteinian physics, although there are a lot of relativistic issues, one would assume that if one were going at a certain speed, let's say two-thirds the speed of light, time would change for everyone who went at that same speed. That, unfortunately, was not necessarily the case when the quantum physicists started to check things out on a micro scale. And that bothered some people, including Einstein, because it kind of meant that physics was no longer repeatable. Physics was no longer a kind of a symmetry between one place and another. A very difficult thing for some people to take. And it also made it much more difficult to come up with a model of how the universe worked. Now, the interesting thing is that these two theories, as strange as they are, and as somewhat contradictory at times as they are to each other, actually explained a great deal of how the visible, the known universe, seemed to work, provided that you could switch back and forth between them and not try to make the two of them fit together in some way. That was the trick. Many physicists for a long time tried to find ways to make them fit together. Albert Einstein tried to do that right until his death in 1956. He was trying to get all these different theories to kind of mesh, and the micro, miniature, subatomic world of the quantum physicists, he wanted that to work with relativistic space and time and gravity, and it just didn't come together for him. Now, I'm going to tell you something. The truth is that the reason these physics thoughts and concepts have not worked out is because they are missing the most important part of what our universe is made of. You see, they work with time and space and energy. Those are wonderful things. There's nothing wrong with time and space and energy. But in metaphysical terms, those things only deal with one-third, the third part, actually, of the creator's mind. It's like if you're into everything that those physics talk about, the most you're dealing with, and probably this isn't even a true statement, you're probably missing even more than this, but the most you're dealing with is one-third of the mind that created the entire universe. And then if you're only looking at one-seventh, at most, of the universe, you have to divide it out by that amount, and you get to a very, very small fraction of what the universe is really like. And I think I'm trying to, through all this, trying to draw a parallel to show why it is that today, as an example, there is more confusion in physics than there was 20 years ago. Even though there's more interesting theories and there's a lot more experimentation and a lot more information, but it isn't really coming together. Now, some physicists like this. They say, well, that's great because it means the universe is very complex and there's all kinds of interesting new things we can discover and blank, blank, blank. Well, that's great. The only thing is that they're not going to discover those wonderful things if they don't realize that they're missing two-thirds of the picture and six-sevenths of the dimensionality of our entire universe. Now, you might be saying, okay, well, what are those two-thirds that are missing? Well, the two-thirds that are missing are very interesting because they have to do with the unseen elements of these two great physical theories that I started the show with. One of them has to do with light. And for those of you who are familiar with Einstein's equation, E equals mc squared, c is a constant for the speed of light multiplied by itself. Now you might say, well, so what? Well, here's the point that I would like to ask you. What's light? Well, some people might say, well, light are those photons running around, you know. Okay, light is photons. Really? Is light photons? Are photons waves? Are they particles or are they neither? Are they both? Actually, the answers are unknown to the questions I just said. So the interesting thing about this is the very thing that you have to use to figure out whether or not something is going to be converted from energy into matter and vice versa using the formula created by Albert Einstein, the very famous formula, uses in its component a constant called the speed of light multiplied times itself, and nobody really understands what light is. Well, that could cause some problems. That could cause a whole bunch of problems. Another set of problems comes from, well, okay, in quantum mechanics and another kind of quantum physics, is it true that something is uncertain, is always uncertain, and it is affected by anything you try to measure something with and on, and is it really indefinite no matter what you do? And the answer to that is yes, but then if everything is really indefinite, then is there anything that can really exist that we could call existence? And the answer to that is yes and no. So again, we have these complicated problems and that are trying to explain what existence is, and the very definition of existence is in a state of quandary. We don't know what existence actually is. That is a problem. That is another big problem, because supposedly something being indefinite doesn't really mean anything if you don't know what existence is to be indefinite about. Okay, well, there's a lot more to talk about, but I'm going to continue with this and maybe make it a lot more easy to understand, I hope so, by talking and adding into this whole mess metaphysics, and explaining how it solves all these issues and much more, and explains a universe of great complexity and tremendous, tremendous beauty. But we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes or less, and then we'll talk more about it.
What book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We are back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. I was just talking with Seth. He is actually our engineer on the show, and I just found out he is an engineer. and he's interested in this subject. So that's fascinating that he's interested. Hopefully you are interested as well. What is that subject? Well, we're dealing with physics and metaphysics and how it can explain how the entire universe works, not the one that necessarily most people think about, but a bigger one, a more complex one. So here is the great, great difference. In metaphysics, light is actually, in some of metaphysics, especially the type that I'm most interested in, which is called ageless wisdom, light itself is actually the thought of the Creator. It's thought, but it's not just any old thought. It's a thought which many people call spiritual thought. And it's a high level of spiritual thought if you're dealing with it in terms of its totality. It's a thought of the Creator. And it has two parts to it. The first part deals with purpose and creation. And these are just catchwords because it's much bigger than any of these words mean. And sacrifice. And sometimes destruction. It's a necessary part for further creation. Sometimes something has to be destroyed. It's also part of sacrifice. All of that's in the first part. The second part deals with inclusiveness and love and consciousness and givingness. Those are all the second part. When you put those two parts together, you end up with thought. Now, why is that true? Well, thought in itself is not just making choices, which is another part of the first part. It's also making choices that consistently have a similar direction, and they actually cause other thoughts to be developed around them. They actually have an effect on what is known as the field of thought. Interestingly, the more something does this in the extreme, the closer it is to the Creator's own mind. This is missing in physics. You won't find it in any part of physics other than a faint whisper. And that whisper is throughout the two theories I talked about in the last segment. In Einsteinian physics, you find that light is critical to understanding Einsteinian physics. Without it, it really just wouldn't work. Now, why is that true? Well, unfortunately, since nobody that I know who is a physicist has ever told me that they really understand what light is, that's the problem. They don't get it. Without knowing the basis of what it is that C is, the constant light, it becomes very difficult to understand or see that it's really connected to spirit and thought. But there's an interesting correlation here. And let me tell you about this. When the fellow named Heisenberg was experimenting with Planck's theories, he discovered that photons, which is like a form of energy, it's light energy though, it's a specific kind of energy, photons follow thought. If an experimenter thought of photons as being a wave, and they can actually test this, they can actually test to see if photons behave as waves. They sure enough did, every time. But if they were trying to test to see if they were like particles, guess what? They became like particles. And whatever way they thought of it is the way that the light changed. Isn't that something? Well, I say the light, I mean the photons. But they're part of light. And it's amazing. So this and other things happened when the physicists of the day, now this is in the mid-1920s, started to do experiments on these very subatomic things. They started to discover that the indefiniteness of something became even greater in indefiniteness based upon the thinking processes of people and if they were contradictory to each other. Whereas consistent thought actually decreased the indefiniteness and made it more definite. Wow, isn't that strange? Not really. What they were discovering was that a part of the universe, which is energy and even space to some extent, follows the thought of whatever is around that is thinking. But it only follows it at the level, relative level, of the thought itself. The more the thought is closer to the creator's thought, the more energy actually follows the thought. So powerful thought comes from thought that is enlightened, that is like the creator. Thought that is unenlightened, that is dark, as space is, by the way. Space is dark. It doesn't have light as a natural constituent. Then what happens is things become more difficult in following thought, and actually they can lose some of their definiteness. It's a very interesting thing. So this has been discovered, but mostly ignored. And people that take physics today especially, this is skipped over a lot of times because it's kind of metaphysical. And more traditional programs in physics try to remove what was discovered so long ago towards the beginning of the last century. Isn't that hard to understand? Because here it's an old idea that's been proven time and again, but it's something that's kind of like ignored because it's one of those things that's uncomfortable. It has a lot of ramifications to it, and it's a trouble. So that's where the problem lies. Too much so, physics in general has sought to eliminate spirit and God, the creator of our universe, from existing. The newest part of this is that in the last few decades, instead of trying to understand multidimensional space, and that there's one universe with a number of dimensions to it, most or a lot of people in physics now try to think about a multi-universe system called parallel universes, where every concocted idea and thing can happen, and there is just randomness and chaos, basically, to the universe, well, at least to these multi-universes, and we're stuck in one, but there's many others. And some people even think you can just flip from one to another, and it gets pretty crazy. It makes life meaningless. It gives no rationale for anything, and it's counterintuitive. Why is it counterintuitive? Because as we examine the universe, almost everything that's being discovered, especially in the last 10 years, especially the last 10 years, one part of physics is contingent upon all others being exactly the way they are, or the universe falls apart. I'm not kidding. It falls apart. It just doesn't work at all. So, and there's zillions. It's more than, it's countless number of contingencies that have to all be happening in order for our universe to be working the way it is. Sound familiar? Yeah, it's just very similar to the way the Earth was formed and evolution and some of the programs I talked about that, how all these things had to come together or nothing would be here right now. So we have a probability issue. The probability issue is this, that in order for our universe to be exactly the way it is right now, it's a zillion to zillion zillion to one shot that everything that would have had to have happened exactly the way it did happen for our universe to be exactly as it is now. Now, there is a thing called the tautology, so we have to be careful here. Tautologies are based upon limited concepts, very small number of concepts that go together and support each other because it just so happens it works that way, but it isn't necessarily the truth. However, the more the concepts and the more the complexity of the system, the less the possibility of a tautology. And since we have zillions and zillions of things coming together to produce the universe that we're in, and even if virtually one of these things were to be altered, things fall apart rather rapidly, that is a most fascinating proof that there is a rational and creative and we'll call it constructive, beautiful thought that is controlling the foundation and development of a universe, but not in a deterministic way, because it wouldn't like to do that. So it created a relativistic universe that has indeterminism at its micro core, and on its macro side has relativism. And these two balance each other out so that its thought does not control everything. Instead, it creates something new that is the creator rather than itself. And that something new is called life, and we're part of it. It's absolutely fascinating that you can make a universe that is as complex and so complete that you can't take even an iota out of it without there being some significant problems. And yet at the same time, the very first creed is freedom. Freedom of thought, freedom eventually of action, for something new that you create called life, and that life acts independently and has freedom to choose. This is the wondrous universe that we exist in, and it's all missing, or almost all missing, in physics as it is today. Now, is physics going to stay that way? I don't think so. The good news is that the more we discover, the more we get befuddled when we only see the small fraction that I said we are seeing in physics in the universe. But the good news is there are other answers, and metaphysics supplies a good deal of them, and when you include metaphysics with physics, you can end up with a really good understanding of how this universe works. That's amazing. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but if you are interested in knowing the complexity of this whole theory, you can go to a book I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning, and you can read a couple chapters or more in that book, especially the ones dealing with science, and it will help to, we'll say, clear up the more complex parts of this explanation, which for a show like this, I really can't get into. Okay, so what is the universe like then? Let's kind of develop it, and I'll try to compare it to what's known and what's added by adding metaphysics. The universe is just amazingly fascinating because it turns out that one of the things that's in many forms of metaphysics is that sound, and sound meaning vibration, is part of how the universe creates. It is a process that is started through a thought, but produced eventually into a vibration, and sound meaning something that in past times would stand in for the word vibration. Because sound is caused by vibration, but it's like the sound of God. Not the sound of, you know, something dropping onto the floor, but this is a bigger kind of sound, bigger kind of vibration. So in a way, you could say that the vibrations of God, which are caused by God's thought, affecting the third part of its mind, which is energy and space and time, changes the energy in space and time to produce, we'll say, eventually everything. It produces everything that we're familiar with, everything that is part of the visible universe. Now, the interesting part about this is this theory that I'm telling you about is also in physics. It's called string theory. And this is another kind of theory that's much more modern than the two earlier kinds that I brought up. But in string theory, the idea is that there are vibrations that actually have dimensionality of some sort to them. They're very, very small, supposedly. And they affect each other, and they affect eventually what we come to call energy and space and time. Now, what Unfortunately, string theorists at the present time, and especially those people interested in what are called M strings, that's membrane type of strings, membranes are like the surface of anything, can vibrate like a string. So, and in this case, the surface of literally our whole universe has a surface to it. But the most important thing about this is that in N theory, it doesn't still bring in spirit. So guess what they have? They have a problem. Because if you don't have thought being involved in the process, spirit being the thought of the creator in some form, in some way, the process becomes all based upon just energy itself, and you end up with the chicken and egg problem. What came first, and then what came before that, and this kind of stuff. So you see, there's no way. There's no way to produce any beginning. And even when you come up with something that looks like kind of a beginning, it still doesn't stick together very well. It eventually actually destroys itself because it just, unfortunately, is missing the most important parts of what it exists as. But if you talk about the vibration of God, God having a thought that produces a certain type of vibration or sound, you can call it a spiritual sound if you like that. I like that idea, actually. Then the results are very different, extremely different. Instead of worrying about how the universe started, it begins to become clear that the universe was started by a being that, out of a field of infinite possibilities, was able to make enough choices within that field to create itself. Choices are creation, provided that they have some cohesiveness and directivity to themselves, and they cause other choices within their same field to do the same, to become part of them. Then you have self-creation. Self-creation comes from any field, if you break it down to smaller levels, but at the field size of there being infinite choices, which is what any God would have to come from, infinite choices, then you have a being so great that it could create a universe. A universe that has seven dimensions because it has seven sounds, seven vibrations to the way that, major ones, to the way that it expresses itself. Now, I'm going to explain a lot more about this when we come back, but we are out of time for this segment. We'll be back in about another 2.5 minutes or so, and when we come back, I will explain this in much greater detail.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Well, we're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about physics and metaphysics, how they interrelate and how they affect each other. And when I ended the last segment, I was discussing how God decided to express itself through seven, we'll call it, thoughts of its own mind. But interestingly, even those seven huge thoughts it decided to give some independence to, the thought itself. And it elected not to be too involved in how those dimensions of time and space that were created by its original thought were going to be expressed. Because this is a being that is so wise, it knows that if its thought controls other thought and controls this thing called life that it's going to create to help to grow itself, because it doesn't want to stagnate and just be as it was in the very beginning, then it has to have non-interference. It has to have freedom, to give freedom to all of life. And so that's what it does. It does this in a very interesting way. It actually creates interference between its thought and the thought of sub-beings, we'll call them, of life that create the seven dimensions of time and space. And some of this interference is actually being discovered by some string theorists this year, actually. They've discovered a little bit about that there is actually some kind of interference going on between what they call membranes and vibrations and strings and. But they think that it's maybe how the universe is made, but they think that there's all these other universes that all are randomly doing something different and et cetera. And that isn't what's happening at all. As a matter of fact, instead of there being parallel universes and an infinite variety of them within the all, what there really is infinite possibilities, but only one universe at a time is created by a being who limits that universe to being its inception of creation. But from that point forward, there is great potential and near infinite choices on sub-levels of all life. Now, the interesting thing is that life is self-limiting because while it has a vast number of choices, it can't make the choices of some other kind of life, which is much more conscious than it is and much more thinking. So life has like a hierarchy of its ability to be creative and its ability to have purpose and to develop all the great things that are possible. This changes the entire system of physics because instead of trying to just find answers that are based upon mostly energy and time and space, you start looking at things like, well, why are things the way they are, and who might be involved in thinking that produces it this way? Those would be better questions to really ask. The whys and whos would actually get a lot further than just trying to find out a little bit more about some subatomic particle or trying to make that particle go a little faster to see if you bang it with something else, what you're going to get. But unfortunately, we're kind of caught in that silly model right now, because if you only believe there's energy, then you got yourself a real problem. And that's the problem we have. Okay, but getting to the solution, there are seven major vibrations and dimensions of time and space that are somewhat, we'll call them in interference with, the original thought of the creator, which gives them some level of independence, and it allows these dimensions of time and space to develop unique kinds of life. Interestingly, another little jewel of a thought is that each one of these seven dimensions of time and space actually have seven subdimensions to them. So they're not even whole in the sense that they have pieces of themselves that are somewhat different. Now I'm going to tell you something that's really fascinating. This would probably have made, originally, Einstein very uncomfortable. And that is that there is an inconsistency to the speed of light and to many other basic, we'll say, factors or constants that are so critical in physics today, in each of these dimensions, and in some cases to the subdimensions as well. What this means is that the speed of light actually changes from one dimension to the next by a considerable amount, by the way. And also, things like time and space commensurately change. They would have to, by the way. And energy becomes more and more indefinite the larger or more complex the dimension is. The less complex the dimension, we're in the least complex one right here, where we're physically alive right now, the more definite energy is, and it actually becomes what we call matter, where it has very little indefiniteness to it, and you end up with the quantum mechanics, quantum physics, actually discovering that the indefiniteness in this dimension is so small that we can barely notice it. But in other dimensions of time and space that we eventually will be living in, by the way, unlike string theory, which suggests that these dimensions are like microscopic, they actually are huge. But that's because if you don't include all parts of the creator's mind in the process, you can't figure out what you're looking at. So actually, the bigger dimensions of time and space have much greater dimensionality, but also much greater indefiniteness to energy, and there is no matter at all. Matter being energy that is less emotion than it is emotion, and matter is energy that is less emotion than it is emotion, and energy itself is energy that is more emotion than it is not emotion. I hope I didn't confuse you with that, but that's the basic definition. And in other dimensions of time and space, there is only energy. There is no matter whatsoever. Matter is kind of like almost unique to right where we are. And when you move away from where we are, which is like the basement, matter just disappears altogether and becomes pure energy. Yeah. So when we die from this dimension of time and space, we're going to go live in another dimension where we will be composed of pure energy, but no matter whatsoever. How does that mean that we just kind of like float around as an amorphous cloud or something? No. Because our thought is right there, and it makes us into a form that we're familiar with. Usually we look pretty close to the way we look right here, but we're made out of this a more amorphous energy, and it does not have matter in it. It just has pure energy. It's kind of a neat thing, actually. Also, there's a much greater indefiniteness, which means that the ability to move through time and space becomes easier. The ability to create using energy becomes literally as one thinks. Yeah, if you would like to change the way you look or change anything else around your environment, provided nobody else is thinking differently from yourself, you can make it into anything you want, just by thought itself. And that's even at the next dimension of time and space, that is more complex than this one, sometimes referred to as the astral dimension. Now remember, there are subdimensions, and those subdimensions are much more apparent when you have this kind of big change taking place in time and space, and everything's getting more indefinite, and all these strange things are going on. Now you can say, well, are there names for this? Yeah, there is. There's a thing called the alpha constant, which is alpha is like the first letter in the Greek alphabet. Alpha means the very beginning. This is the most important constant in physics. The alpha constant significantly changes from one dimension to the next in time and space. And a subpart of that alpha constant called the quantum constant is changing as well, which is how much something is indefinite. And it's just an amazing thing that this is going on because physics doesn't know it. As a matter of fact, they're inventing theories almost by the day, and I'm not exaggerating this. By the day, to try to explain all the stuff they're finding out, just observing and getting information about how the universe is working, and yet they are not able to get closer to the truth. They aren't able to figure out anything that doesn't seem to blow up in another week or two because they're excluding two out of three parts of the Creator's mind. They're excluding what thought of the Creator is, what spiritual thought is, what light is. All that is really getting excluded, and so we end up with a mess, a big mess. One theory explains one thing, and another theory explains something else, but nothing supports anything together. What about gravity? Gravity has always been a big problem. Gravity is best understood this way, that matter itself, when it is of a certain kind and very dense, produces a thought. But the thought is like, hey, let's all get together and get bigger and bigger and bigger, instead of thought that is creative, like the creator. Gravity is like the, we'll say, the opposite of the creator's creation. It's the thing that makes things kind of slow down, and it makes life much more difficult to develop, but it has some good things to it. Gravity creates diversity. It forces life to struggle, and it creates, unfortunately, some destruction in life, which is the model of evolution, of course, but at the same time, it allows this amazing explosion in the different kinds of life. So it has some good things. Gravity is greatest where we are, in this part of the universe. Unfortunately, it also makes it the most difficult place to live. And it creates almost all of the problems that are usually associated with survival of the fittest and evolutionary struggles and evolutionary development for lower forms of life that don't think spiritually. Guess what? Humans think spiritually, if they choose to, because we've got the capability. We're the first of life, in terms of hierarchy of development, that can do that. And since we can do that, we can actually overcome some of the struggles that gravity produces, and inertia is one of those things. We actually can change that. We can free ourselves from its effects at times. Not just talking about flying in a spaceship or an airplane. I'm not talking about just that limited kind of thought about overcoming gravity. I'm talking about all the effects that gravity have on everything and everyone all the time. It's constantly slowing us down, constantly reducing our life in some way. And yet we're constantly trying to overcome it through civilization and technology and through thought that sometimes really makes its mark. It does exactly what I'm insinuating. And we start to grow. We actually start to become a little closer to our Creator, provided we do it in a way that is balanced and that allows other life to do the same. That's not so easily done, but we try. And it's a really wonderful thing. So when we look out to the universe and we see what we see, what we're really seeing is a minuscule portion where there is tremendous struggle because of high gravitational issues, and where what is missing from our vision is spirit, and spirit is behind everything that is going on, but we can't seem to see it. Now, people talk about black holes. They have enormous gravity. Some are super black holes with super big gravity. What are they doing? I'm not going to be able to tell you about them tonight, but I will next week, because we're going to have Volume 2, remember. And I'll get into the more prosaic, the more intricate elements of physics, and try to explain each one of these as pieces of metaphysics, and how those pieces fit together in a way that allows our universe to be the most amazing place that anybody could ever imagine. Far more amazing than the present understandings of physics suggests. And physics is actually getting more interesting, because it is discovering a lot of stuff, it just can't explain it. But it is getting more interesting. It's showing a universe that is far more complex and creative than it was ever suggested in any theory, including Einstein's and Planck's and everybody else's theories. This is really getting into interesting stuff. But you'll have to wait till next week, because we are running out of time. And I want to mention a couple things. First of all, for those of you who are in the Phoenix metropolitan area, you can come and visit one of the people that are a member of the spiritual group that I'm a member of, talking about, and hold on, they're going to hold it up for me, Overcoming Fear. That's Mesa Fiesta Borders. on December 17th from 7 p.m. to 8:15. And go and hear her talk. She's been doing this for a couple months now, and she's getting good at it, if she wasn't already good at it. So go and hear her talk. Her name is Mimi, and she's going to be talking about overcoming fear. Now, will I be there? I don't know. I got so many things going on. If I can make it over, I will. But if I'm not there, say hello to Mimi. And also, this Sunday, on 11:70 a.m. in the Massachusetts area, which is Providence, Rhode Island, and Boston, etc., you can hear the show, The Middle Way to Wisdom, from 1 o'clock to 2 p.m. on the Pacific Coast, and from 4 to 5 p.m. on the Eastern Coast. That's when you can hear it. Or you can go to, instead, WDISAM.com, Internet Radio, and listen to it there anywhere in the U.S. at the appropriate time, of course. And it's The Middle Way to Wisdom. I think it's going to be a great show, and so please tune into that. That's this Sunday coming up. Okay, well, on today's show, I hope this has been of some assistance to giving us some basics about how metaphysics and physics blend together and really can support a unified theory of how our universe works. Next week, we'll go into even more detail. I'll explain a lot more things about it, and hopefully you'll find that equally, if not more so, interesting. And then, until next week, I hope all of you will continue to ponder the thoughts that I have given you, and maybe, if you want, you can email me as well. By the way, you can do that at thoughts@whylifeis.com, anytime, thoughts@whylifeis.com, and let me know what you are thinking about in terms of this show or any other one that I've done. Okay, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.